Welcome to this edition of Industrialist. I am Prasad Satyavolu from Accenture. I have today with me Chris Helsel, CTO of Goodyear. Chris, welcome.
Thank you, Prasad. I'm glad to join today.
You've been in the industry. You've seen lots of twists and turns. What is the one word that describes you?
I'd say resilient. You mentioned seeing lots of twists and turns. I think part of the resiliency then is to really look at those and say, these are opportunities more than anything. I've said to people when they ask for career advice, they say, how did you ever get to be CTO? I said, well, just say yes. These things usually mean there's some new problem to solve. So say yes, lean in and go after it.
In your role as CTO and SVP of operations at Goodyear, how do you bring these inspirational qualities of resilience into play?
We have what we call our strategy roadmap, and it's actually been recognized as a document that's really well done, and it really leads our corporation and keeps us together. It's one single page, and in the upper left, it captures three circles, and those three circles are innovation excellence, sales and marketing excellence, and operational excellence. And we say where we win is by operating at the intersections of those, and the customer is perfectly in the center of that. And so when you think of these two circles, how do they work together? It's really about recognizing that most business problems are best solved multifunctionally. And so one quick example could be, in the tire industry, there's been a real proliferation of the number of tire sizes to cover the market. Well, of course, that's a huge challenge in your plants because your plants, you know, the size of the runs, the number of setups that you have to do and changeovers, are deeply affected by that number of SKUs you have to offer. And one of the things you don't maybe recognize is in design, all the decisions you're making for new materials, et cetera, have to go into that same challenge. So design can have a huge impact on complexity, and it's not just a manufacturing problem. So when you bring the two groups together, you can really make much more progress on such a problem.
Goodyear was founded 125 years ago. As you are reflecting on what's the last 25 years have been and what lies ahead, how do you typify the recipe for success?
When you reflect on a 25-year horizon, in our industry, mobility for the majority of that was a pretty stable, concept for people. They went out, they bought a car, they use it about 5% of the time, and they transport themselves. Clearly, in the last 7 years, people have really rethought what that means. You see shared, right? Obviously, the Ubers and things like that, and changing the idea that all the things mom and dad told me not to do, get in a stranger's car, I'm going to do because I have this phone that authenticates this person, and now I'm good to go. For Goodyear, up until then, that transformation, it was really about getting much more efficient, running your stage gate type processes. You know, you need incrementally better features in your product, whether that's the fuel economy through rolling resistance or tread wear. And we were very set up that process ran well. With this transformation, we really stepped back and said, what is our real job that we do? And what are new ways we can do it? Because people are getting mobility differently. And so with that, we really reflected on the thing we uniquely do is control the forces between vehicles and the ground. And we do that through four palm-sized patches of rubber. And we've been doing that, to your point, for 125 years. And we did that wonderfully with chemistry and mechanics and even bringing computer modeling simulation to doing that job better. Really, though, we said, there's other ways we could do this with this whole digital transformation. So the other side of what we do in the technology space is now building out sensor-based knowledge around the real-time condition of the tire and the road and how that can be ingested to make systems like your anti-lock braking work better, or even in the most advanced applications, autonomous driving. So the answer would be simply this. I think you have to recognize where that big pivot is and then rethink what is your core job or those adjacency jobs you can do and how you might do them differently because of the emergence of technology that was happening at the same time.
How do you see the ecosystem of OEMs and suppliers playing a better collaborative role in this emerging new paradigm of mobility?
I'd reflect on some of our own experience in this space and the announcements we've made. So ZF, and what we've done with them and talked about at CES this year was a product by which we're bringing information about the tire and road conditions, and we're able to bring that into vehicle control software, which then obviously integrates into the safety systems around the vehicle. The one that we talked about was actually where we're anticipating the event of hydroplaning. So we're tying into local weather, where in that case, we're saying, well, what's the probability of the road being wet? We then use data off both the vehicle and off a sensor that we have in the tire, and we're detecting that lifting. How much is that contact changing? We're using that in order to make a recommendation of a safe speed. And in the most advanced case, that safe speed is then being put again through their cubic system to actually slow the vehicle. So if the person's not responding through a warning, you could actually control the vehicle. I use that example only to say, I think with this evolution, each of us bringing a product and there's one integrator may not be the best model. It's really about that network. So a couple of us at that tier one level will combine together, bring a product that then can be consumed as already had that integration done. If I had a prediction, the magic ball to look at, it would be we're going to see more and more and more of this, because it's very difficult for any company to have all those competencies to bring together, to advance these solutions to that type of fidelity.
What is your thought on off-vehicle technologies like artificial intelligence playing a role in this whole transformation?
I'd say the one area very near opportunity for everybody is in your own design process inside your house. Really think about how you can redo those jobs. And I'll give a couple of examples of that. One not being AI and the other one being AI. So the first one is, we've been on a more than 30-year journey on multi-physics simulation, real big, high-performance compute with Sandia National Laboratories. Those who may not be familiar, they do a lot of work with making sure the readiness of the U.S. nuclear arsenal, many of those kind of defense-type things. And you'd say, well, how the heck is a tire company tied up with them? Is because actually doing simulations on tires is very challenging. They deflect more than 40%. They have to roll through water, roll through snow. So that multi-physics of how a solid and a fluid have to interact. And you're doing all of these analyses on really big, high-performance compute. We give them an ability to validate. Of course, we've incorporated this in our design process. And that's allowed us to get to the point where we actually combining that with a vehicle simulator, so meaning, it's actually full size where our test driver sits in that rather than a car. You bring that virtual tire into that, and you can actually do things like your handling approvals with your OEMs collaboratively. So there's a really big example of how data enables us to work differently. It's not AI, though. But now that you do all that simulation, now you can go use machine learning in order to build applications off that. So now when we even do that tire design, we harvest all of the previous designs we've done via machine learning applications, which makes our designers much more efficient. And in particular, if you have a new designer, it gives them a recommendation of where to start with respect to all their design parameters before they even start doing that large-scale simulation work. The second is, obviously, behind those applications, like I mentioned with hydroplaning, is algorithms. And those algorithms have been built, obviously, similarly with machine learning. So there's the internal efficiency you could drive, and there's your external products and how you could change your products. Both come to bear by leveraging these technologies in different ways. The people aspect of this, though, is, I think, the most fascinating. I already mentioned how our folks are changing the way they work. But even more interesting was an application we did recently with Gen AI. And we've got millions of technical documents. And so we built a application using Gen AI that allows to access that information much easier than somebody has to go cull through 20 papers. It comes back in seconds with, you know, hey, here's everything we learned last time that we tried this particular material. Just think of how much more efficient your people are. And those are jobs that aren't exactly rewarding. The rewarding part's doing something with it, not doing just the, you know, the reading papers part. So think of this almost like the suit you put on your people to augment them to be a little more superhuman. And there's a lot of those kind of opportunities out there.
How can manufacturing leverage similar technologies for advancement within Goodyear?
Let's start with the automation, the area that I think is always number one when you think of manufacturing, and that's trying to make the workplace more safe. So what you tend to find when you put automation in particular in a tire plant, you know, tire building and making components in tires requires that people historically have been very intimate with the equipment, right? They're interacting with even sometimes rotating parts. And so when we put automation to this, which we have been, and we've been on this journey, you obviously take them farther away from those things. Number one imperative, I think, when you think your automation, it, the right thing to do is just keep making our environments more and more and more safe, right? Now, when you get that, what's the second thing you're going to get? Typically more repeatability and quality, consistency in your product, which means you don't have, you know, maybe batches of extra work away and things that you have to deal with. This should improve the flow, improve your consistency. And then third, of course, is some of the addressing challenges around your cost structure, or it's maybe not even cost. It's just sometimes difficult to get the right talent, right? There's a lot of competition for talent out there. When you think of these automations, it really resonates across four dimensions in that way. And we've been investing for that. In particular, things like the way in which tires get assembled has been a real big one. The transportation pieces, where you have a lot of moving equipment in your plants. Instead, you replace that with gantries and other conveyors and things, rather than humans having to carry these around. I'm thinking of it quite a bit. What are the jobs people want to do, and what are the jobs they don't? Those kind of jobs should be typically your first ones for this automation. So there's that safety, ergonomic, all that benefit that comes with that. The second thing is, of course, the IoT play and being able to put, you know, sensors in places you didn't before, get data and really understand causation of why am I getting a certain yield at the end? And you could get all the way back to the point where that quality is maybe being compromised, and being able to take action more surgically. And you could actually start with this data, stepping back, looking at your assets around the world. We make tires in 50 tire plants, you know, and figure out, well, these are the ones that we're going to central control on the equipment. These are the ones you really should focus on if you have to make adjustments. So once again, think about how trained somebody has to be to have that knowledge himself on that piece of equipment, years of experience, then now you can make them much more effective much sooner. So I would say manufacturing is exactly parallel to the problem that you try to solve to make your engineers more efficient. The parallelism's there.
Can you elaborate on the reskilling or the culture of the org within the organization that is so critical today in achieving the change that you set out to? It'll be great to hear your views on this culture change and the organization
set. I usually start with it's a leadership problem. And I'll just give my personal journey on this, and then I'll build from there, I think, into answering your question. It was 2020, and I was a couple years into being the chief technology officer. And I was like, geez, why is the organization still, you know, working so much on productivity? And don't they see that all this mobility is happening and all this change, and how come they're not out there looking for new solutions? And finally, one day I looked in the mirror, I said, because you dummy, you never asked them for that. So number one is, if you've got people not maybe going after opportunities and things that you see so clear, you better make sure you told them that's what's important to you. We did that by leveraging the playing to win approach of the book by the same title, and laid out aspirations and bold goals, which is what we term them inside Goodyear. And the full intentionality of this was we weren't being asked for these stretch solutions. So what we envisioned and said was, hey, if we could have this capability demonstrated by, I'll give you one of them, 100% sustainable material tire in 2030. Nobody was asking us for that. And we said, but look what's going on with sustainability, the focus on materials, where materials come from, petrochemicals being replaced. We need to go work on this. So we rolled these out, and there's six on the technology side, there's six on the operations side. The first thing we got back from the organization is, wow, that's great. So tell us how we should do that. And we said, and this was a vulnerability that we hadn't really shown as leaders, and said, no, exactly, we don't know how to do it. We need you to go help figure it out. And it was just a moment for the organization to get their heads up, be proactive, and go search. It was clear to them they couldn't solve a problem like that just working harder with the old approaches. Now, that's not to say there's still not opportunities for continuous improvement always in your organization, okay? But this is how you get people to really step out. So that's how I have found you trigger an organization to go find new ways to do things. They have to come to that conclusion. I can't get there just working harder. Once you unlock that, you better stand behind them. And when they come back with some things they want to pursue, you better put your money where your mouth is. Okay, because otherwise they say, well, that was just a game. This isn't really important to you because you're not going to put priority on it. And, you know, fortunate for us, our teams have really embraced this concept and are really driving things like this forward. So we've got several of these even in the operations area, you know, just step changes in how we're trying to eliminate all waste, 100% renewable energy in our footprint, manufacturing footprint. And many of these now are even hardwired into our corporate responsibility report. We started 2020 technology, 2022 we added operations, and now my staff, which is the two, get together every month and they track their progress. But most importantly is, do we have the right work streams and are we working across those boundaries to deliver these really hard goals? I could say that's a learning journey. You know, and just the way they even talk to themselves, challenge each other. But ultimately, we commit and we go, right? You can't debate forever. But that's been a real game changer for us in how to make this happen. One thing to just reinforce, you still got to go do your continuous improvement every day improvements, okay?
Yeah.
So it's not a, geez, we only do this or we do that. That's like people in a canoe running to one side or the other. Nothing good happens there. It's an and. I think that's always going to be a balance. We all have a few percent of inflation every year, right? It's been a little higher lately. And, you know, the marketplace isn't always bearing that out. So you're going to have to find that productivity while you're doing this innovation. I would suggest if you're struggling with that, focus hard on your core. First thing you usually cut in tougher times is the new. Protect the heck out of your new. Just keep asking questions around, why is it we do that the way we do? And what you'll find is, you know, lots of initiatives, maybe in the past, you added a team to do something, and now that's on sustain mode, but you never gave the people back. That's where you got to go harvest, okay? So, and those are tough conversations. Ultimately, you got to roll them sleeves up, get down to that level of individual to make these changes, but that's how you got to go hunt and really get an organization to drive that. Just keep pushing it. But the consistency over time delivers.
I want to zoom out a little bit. If we look at the overall mobility industry ecosystem, where do you think we are headed? Any insights that you can share?
We all are looking at headlines today. Probably everybody has similar frameworks like this. If you're in the mobility space, where we called it FACES, fleets, autonomous, connected, electric, and sustainable. We said these are the long trends that are coming, replacing, again, just only personal car ownership as a solution. I think we're going to have a blend. If you had interviewed me 2 years ago, I'd said EV is just done deal. It's going to go on this huge linear path. And boy, it was going, and it's hit a little bit of a transition point here. And some of the infrastructure and things maybe have to catch up. You know, which purposes is this vehicle really best at versus maybe other solutions, even the continued efficiency coming with internal combustion or hydrogen. So I think anybody, I would say, think of this future the way I'm thinking of it, our team is thinking of it, is pragmatic. It's not going to be this or that, it's an and. And so make sure you've got solutions whichever way it goes. If you just bet on one, boy, you know, you better be right. And that's not easy to do. The second thing is things like autonomy. A lot of predictions were it's just going to turn the light bulb on and here it's going to be. I think it's going to be more evolutionary, but we're going to get there. A great partner we have, Gatik, who what they've done is just limit the use cases. Because they make right turns, they do their deliveries at night, prescribed routes, you know, the same type of vehicle. You know, you limit your variables. And that's going to allow, ultimately, you just open up more and more use cases. Similarly, I mentioned ADAS, you know, automated driver assist systems, just getting better and better and smarter to the point where they are more autonomous. And it's evolutionary totally. So I'm every bit as bullish on the trends. It's more a matter of how they're going to come is more evolutionary and probably a basket of solutions coexisting at least for some periods of time.
When we started off, we spoke about what is the one word that describes you, and you mentioned resilience. Now let me ask you, what is the one word that inspires you?
I'd say inquisitiveness. That's probably the second word that I like to relate to. You know, that whole theory behind the bowl goals was get our heads up, be inquisitive. What does this mean to us? What are our opportunities? Rethink how we do approach. That starts usually with a willingness to question. And that inquisitiveness pays a lot of dividends as you're dealing with a lot of this change, right? So you might see in another industry something and you say, how could that apply to us? And if that's your natural question you ask, as long as you have an ability to bring that back and translate it into some action, that inquisitiveness with action, I think that's a really important skill as well as the resilience, because those two have to balance each other off a little bit in my mind. Inquisitiveness could just say, oh, that's interesting, that's interesting, that's interesting. You want to drive an organization crazy. Be a C-level executive who every day comes in asking them about something different because they'll think that's important and that's what they need to go do. Okay, so you've got to translate this into, well, pragmatically, this is what it means to us so that we have, you know, optionality or that resilience. You got to balance those off. Don't get overweighted on one versus the other. Probably when I first became CTO, I had too much inquisitiveness. You know, love to read, love to bring in new ideas. I actually had to get a coach to control that who would sit through meetings and say, at the end of the meetings, we'd have a one-by-one and say, here's the three times you took this in the wrong place. They're right now wondering what should they do. So you've got to have some discipline around this. Leadership management is much more of a discipline than we probably give it credit for.
Chris, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's been great having a conversation.